Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
I can never talk before he gets his yelling in. We're halfway through our show as we shove you into your Monday Labor Day. Here's the thing that I appreciate about not traveling holidays is that many of you will be in some kind of traffic at some point on Monday, or you will have to fly, and there are record numbers of people flying this Labor Day weekend. No, thank you. However, I will be flying on Friday. So we've got one more family wedding in Texas to get to. Can you believe this? Same family, four weddings, including ours, in the span of 9 months, four weddings in the same family. And so we have a wedding that takes place. It's actually north of Dallas, so up near the Oklahoma border, coming up on Saturday. And that was part of what I talked about with our friend Josh Pate last week. We're not going to re-air that part of the conversation, but if you missed it, he owes me a free tank of gas very soon. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can listen to all of our show, including the guests, who are podcasted separately every weekday morning, even on Labor Day. Those links are available now. It's a different link, so I've had to share it with you on both Twix and Facebook. I'll do it again on Monday morning, but like everything else in this world, we've migrated to a different streaming service. And so we're still working out the kinks. If you notice a problem or you come across a problem, please let me know. But whether you get the link from Spotify or Amazon Music or Odyssey or wherever else you get your podcast, I hope that everything is still there, available, and working the way that you want it to. But if not, I know they'll be ironing out the kinks. One of the things that annoys me is that there's no photo that pops up when you use the link. So now it's just a link. And I know as well as you do, if you use social media, pictures always attract more attention. GIFs attract more attention. But also, people rarely use the links. They may view what's in the headlines, but they don't necessarily use the link. There has to be a hook. And a photo is nice, but right now, no photo. So the IT department is still working on that. Kind of like the NFL, we'll be working out the kinks in the first month, and college football teams are working out their kinks now in their first games, or in some cases, a couple of teams have already played two games. A&M hosting Notre Dame on Saturday night with 100,000 plus in College Station. I'm telling you, that is one of the most incredible places to watch a sporting event ever. I've been there, field level. The way the cadets and all the fans don't sit down for 4 hours, but they sway and they chant and they move and they jump up and down. It makes the stands, and they tower above the field, makes the one particular facade of the stands with all the fans look like it's swaying back and forth too, and it's moving. It's quite the odd optical illusion. And those fans were treated to a 6-6 game at halftime against the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. But in the second half, Notre Dame able to establish itself, taking advantage of turnovers, pulling away. And how about this? The Fighting Irish with 198 rushing yards. So no one's offensive numbers were particularly pretty, aesthetically pleasing. It wasn't one of those games that would put a lot on the highlight reel. But for head coach Marcus Freeman, still a win in that atmosphere. It's amazing. And the team was really excited and fired up.
We always say execution fuels emotion. And then when you have a success like that, you're emotional, man. I appreciate our fans. I mean, we knew right where they were going to be. I showed the players, I showed the whole football program. I said, this is right where our fans are going to be. This is exactly what the stadium is. And so we knew right where to go. And we appreciate our fans that travel from all over the country to support us. And it's just a proud moment, man. Sometimes your emotions get the best of you, but hopefully that happens after a game, not during.
shoot, we're a gritty team, and we embrace that. I think that every game we go into, we know we're going to fight our tail off to win. I think we got a lot of talent this year, and that complements our hard work. And I feel like we can go into any if we can go into this environment and beat a team like that, that's coached as well as they are, I feel like that gives us all the confidence in the world to go into any environment in the country.
Quarterback Riley Leonard goes 18 of 30, 158 yards, had a 63 yards rushing. But yeah, it was really the ability to control the trenches. And kind of an interesting twist, too. The new Texas A&M coach was facing his former quarterback in Riley Leonard.
It wasn't fun. I knew it wouldn't be. He made a bunch of big-time plays. He made a play on the 3rd and 5. He made some runs on the last drive. He did what he did and you know, made enough plays to win the football game. I told him I loved him after the game, and you know, I'll be rooting for that kid for the rest of his life.
Yeah, so they worked together before. He coached Leonard in the past. And so it's you can imagine it's one of those bittersweet situations where you like to see the guy that you poured into and invested, you like to see him succeed, but at the same time, not against your team. So yeah, to get this environment week number one and have it be an upset for Notre Dame at College Station, even though Notre Dame, the higher ranked team, it's a really tough place to win. Man, what a Saturday night under the lights. Or if you were watching on the West Coast, it kicked off at 4:30 your time. 855-212-4227. Online at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. For those of you who missed our conversation with Josh Pate, he has Josh Pate's College Football Show. He's with CBS Sports and HQ, but just a really wildly popular, phenomenal college football show. They have a lot of fun. He was at the Georgia-Clemson game. We had a chance to talk to him about some of the different issues and challenges facing college football in what is an ever-shifting landscape. So I wanted to bring back part of that. We'll pick it up where I was asking him about the Big 12 and why it's nationally misunderstood.
Well, if you and I were to just walk out of your studio right now, find some folks in town that watch college football, ask them what they think about Big 12 football, and they'd say, not a lot of defense, high-flying, air raid all over the place, pinball. And that is not the Big 12 whatsoever anymore. It was a decade ago. And the Big 12 has always been a couple of steps ahead, honestly, of college football. They've had to be that way because they lack the top-end talent that lets you do whatever you want to do. In the SEC, you got, in Big 10 combined, you got half a dozen programs that really get to choose whichever way they want to do it because they got the players to do it any which way they want to. In the Big 12, you're hamstrung by that. And so they are forced to innovate. They're forced to be ahead of the curve. Well, that used to mean, you know, Mike Leach out at Texas Tech doing all kind of crazy stuff and people stay up late to watch it. Well, the last 4 or 5 years, the Big 12 has been smash mouth, roll up your sleeves, really, really good defense. As a result, very unpredictable, a lot of variance and outcome type games. And, you know, Colorado steps into that. And they'll have a couple of players better than anyone in that conference, at least, and more young ones that will end up being that way. But it's not a conference full of football players. It's a conference full of teams. Really, really sound, well-constructed, high-culture, high-character teams. So you've got to be one of those to beat those kind of teams.
Right now, 5 of them in the preseason rankings, which don't mean a whole lot, but they are teams to watch. We've officially entered the era, at least for now, of the Power 4 conferences. What does that mean to the average fan? Anything?
I say to the average fan, it means something because we've gotten so used to saying Power 5, Power 4. I don't even look at college football that way right now, honestly. I look at it as a Power 2, and then the other two, we can call them whatever you want to, but I mean, they are not playing the same caliber and depth of football in the ACC and the Big 12, all due respect, as they are in the SEC and the Big 10. And then what's really happening too, past what we call the quote unquote Power 4, and this is really where you get in the weeds and you got to stay up to date as a fan, what the transfer portal is doing to the top of the best G5 rosters is criminal, at least if you're a G5 fan. And what's happening is you've just got an exchange of talent, and the ones that aren't good enough at the Power 4 level drop down, and the ones that are good enough elevate. And as a result, you don't have Boise States anymore. The school still exists, but those vintage programs like Cincinnati back in the day, Utah back in the day, UCS back in the day, those three have something in common. They all became Power Four programs. So when you think about the romanticism of what used to be a Cinderella story at the G5 level, those programs either elevated and joined a power conference, or their players are getting rated now. And one other thing that's happening that I swear to you is not being talked about a fraction as much as it should. The NCAA passed new coaching rules this past summer, and there was so much other stuff going on, people just didn't pay attention. You are unlimited now as to how many on-field coaches you can have, which means these power programs, Miami, Alabama, Ohio State, they're free to go take any amount of coaches they want to from the G5 and FCS ranks. And a bunch of them are coordinators at those levels, and they're just coming to be analysts at a place like Georgia. And the reason is because you'll make more money there, but also you crossed that great divide and you got yourself in the door of a major program. And so not only are the players leaving, the coaches are leaving, and as a result, the gap just grows further and further, have versus have not.
Josh Pate is with us, week one college football preview, and he's got the newly renamed Josh Pate's College Football Show, also with CBS Sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Josh, the last time we talked, you were helping me process the revelation that the top flight quarterbacks in college football are making $6, $7, $8 million. I recently had another revelation, and it really did send me down a bit of a rabbit hole. Why does a college football program need a general manager?
Oh, now, we look, I could filibuster the rest of this show on this. So this is an interesting development now. People that have been, you know, sort of forward-thinking in this sport have been calling this for a little while. Right now, the college game mirrors the pro game much more than it ever has before. Amy, we're still at the very, very precipice of the revenue-sharing era. So this time next year, hopefully we talk again before then, but if it's this time next year, we will be talking about each of these schools having 20-some-odd million dollars in payroll from media rights deals that they are dividing up amongst their roster. Well, now I want you to think about this. How do you divide that money up? And how do you structure it where it's an advantage? Because you're going to have some desperate recruiting programs out there that go offer a ton of money to true freshmen. You're going to have programs that have their you-know-what together who understand that is not the way to build a sustainable program. You have to have a merit-based escalator-type earning system, just like you do in the real world, or you're supposed to have it. And what's happening right now with that combined with the transfer portal, and I'm going to tell you this is one of the big stories right now when I talk to coaches, Kirby Smart has Georgia as one of the top programs in the country. All right, he's not losing his starters. Kirby Smart is having his second-line guys gutted because a lot of desperate programs out there are willing to pay far above market value for Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State-style second-string players. And what's going to happen is Georgia plays Clemson this Saturday. Ohio State's got big games coming up. You watch some of these teams. Bama is a perfect case study as well. Watch some of these elite teams and watch them look incredible. But watch what one injury could disproportionately do more so than it used to. And then ask yourself, all right, how are they going to adjust in the future? And does a head coach really want to be the one that's worried about salary structure, which is basically what we're talking about now? The answer is no. These are football coaches.
Right.
They never signed up for this. You got to have these guys in the building. And I'll also tell you another thing that's happening. You've got people who never in a million years thought they would have a role in an athletic department, like in a college football program, getting jobs in college football now. I mean, someone who majored in business and finance is now really, really high up the totem pole in a lot of these football complexes, and they never would have been there 5 years ago.
And yet somehow with all of this and the wild, wild west and how crazy it is, how convoluted, you can still have a coach get nabbed for a recruiting violation. That cracks me up. Anything else goes, but somehow Kirk Ferentz ends up with a recruiting violation.
That's happening, and then we've got the Michigan stuff happening right now. We're in this transition period where I don't think we're too much further down the road from these conferences taking on the task of enforcement and the NCAA not even handling that anymore. I know people laugh at that and say, oh, these conferences could never be trusted to do that. Actually, if you get them all on board with agreeing to a governance structure, they'd be way more equipped to do it because those conferences control something the NCAA doesn't, and that is payout. I think that's going to happen. I also think with this whole Michigan thing floating around, you know, people are talking about what the NCAA could do. Will they drop the hammer on Michigan? Well, Amy, I'd ask you this. Do you think, in your right mind, with how much money is being paid by networks to acquire media rights deals to these conferences, do you think in your right mind or anyone else's right mind that those conferences are going to sit back and those networks are going to sit back and allow a completely and totally antiquated investigating body in Indianapolis, street named NCAA, do you really think they're going to let them come in and devalue one of their primary assets like Michigan? I'm not talking about going and fining Michigan. Of course you could do that. But taking scholarships away, delivering some postseason ban, that's 80s and 90s stuff. I don't think the NCAA has the teeth to do that even if they want to anymore.
At some point, as you talk about with the coaches, it's got to be a relief just to focus on football. To hear a Mike Gundy say, I finally had to tell my players, get your agents to stop calling me asking for more money. It's time to focus on football. I mean, it's so complicated these days.
And here's the ironic part. What Mike Gundy is saying is actually in the best interest of the player, because the thing that maximizes a player's value more than anything else is winning football games and playing at a high level, not by having your attention fragmented in August because some quasi-agent by, you know, label only told you, I think we can get $25,000 more out of the school if you just sit out practice today.
Like,
that is so penny-wise, pound-foolish. But the problem, unlike pro sports, is you don't really have to be accredited to call yourself an agent in the college game right now, which is one of the other issues that really have to be addressed about that sport.
Josh Pate is with us after his show, which has got a brand new name. We're going to talk about that coming up, but still with CBS Sports, and we love to have him here with us after hours with Amy Lawrence. Just like the Patriots and no Bill Belichick, it's going to be odd to see someone else patrolling the sidelines other than Nick Saban. What changes with Kalen DeBoer?
I'm going to drop something on you that's probably going to raise some eyebrows. I think they upgraded their coaching staff defensively, which is just mind-boggling because Saban is a career defensive guy, one of the best to ever do it. Kalen DeBoer is an offensive guy. Here's what happened. I'm going to take you in the weeds for just a second. You probably know what I'm about to say. I'm not sure the audience does. In the coaching world, in college football, the way hiring happens is not the way people think it happens. People think these coaches have these Rolodexes full of names, and they've scouted all these coaches, and they have files on all of them. In reality, it's just what agent are you with? And then when you got an opening, they provide you with a list of 30 names under that same agency and pick which ones you want. That's the trade-off for being represented by the best in the game, Jimmy Sexton at CAA, chief among them. Mm-hmm. So even Nick Saban had become prone later in his career to some misses in the hiring world. Not to mention, it was tough for Saban to get his first choices in the latter portion of his career, because retirement was rumored. And so as a result, Saban was still incredible at the end of his career. His staffs were just good and nothing more. So DeBoer came in and actually, I think, upgraded the personnel on his defensive coaching staff. And so in the aggregate, you probably improved the coaching staff there, which is just mind-boggling to say. The team that they're inheriting has the number one talent roster in the country right now. I don't think they have as good a depth as Ohio State and Georgia, but front-end talent, Bama will be as good as anyone in the country. So you just have to cross your fingers for injury luck there. But I just think about what DeBoer did with Michael Penix, and I think about what he could do with Jalen Milroe. They got another kid there named Ty Simpson, if they need to test their quarterback depth, that they also feel really good about. So Bama doesn't have an easy schedule this year either, but it's such an atypical situation. Normally, when you take over a program, it's because the previous guy got fired. I don't know that I have ever seen a coach walk into a more blessed position than DeBoer, which flies in the face of conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is no one wants to take over for a legend. Well, that's a lie. No one wants to take over for the legend that let his program erode. I mean, with all due respect now, the end of legends' careers in this sport, whether it's Bryant at Alabama, whether it's Bowden down at Florida State, whether it's Paterno at Penn State, those programs are well past their vintage years by the end of those guys' careers. Saban was an overtime play away from making another national title game in the last year of his career. So the roster's ready-made to win. DeBoer is a one percenter, got full confidence in himself. I think the guy could compete for a national title this year.
I said the same thing. If you're walking into Alabama, you have everything you possibly need to succeed. You'd really have to try hard to screw it up. I'm on board there, too. I would expect Alabama to be right where it always has been under Nick Saban. Congratulations. You just re-signed a new deal to stay with CBS Sports, and now you get to own your show, which is called Josh Pate's College Football Show. What does that mean to you after all the years and the time and energy you've invested?
The world means the world. This is a very, very interesting era, sort of in the media world in general. I mean, I was doing construction jobs and heating and air installation, worked in a fabric warehouse down in Columbus, Georgia, as recently as like 2011 or 2012. And all I did was I listened to sports talk radio all day. But I mean, you know as well as I do, up until the mid-20-teens, there were just certain avenues to get in this business.
Right.
And if you didn't have access to them, you were not going to get in this business. And in my estimation, overhead and distribution were sort of the Berlin walls that fell in the mid-20-teens. What I mean by that is up until that point, to have your voice heard nationally or globally, you had to have massive distribution power at your potential. And only a few networks held that power. And then the overhead, the fancy studios you needed access to, the equipment you needed access to, very few people held the keys to those. Then, in the mid-20-teens, when platforms like YouTube, Facebook, etc., added the live broadcast mechanism to their platform, total game changer. All of a sudden, anyone theoretically has a path. And so that's when we started, you know, the show that you see now, and that's a long, long story there. But to look 10 years later, I say this as humbly as I possibly can, but we've got our show positioned as the most watched college football show in all of digital media. That includes everybody. What it tells me is there wasn't always an audience for it. There was always a hunger for maybe something other than what was being offered. And I feel like blessed enough to be surrounded by the right people, but also to have come along in a time where that was afforded to me, because I could have the same hopes and dreams as I do now in 1993, but you know, being in the position I was in with without the proper college degree at the time, without any kind of family relationship or connection, I would have never gotten this shot. So it's a very, very fortuitous sort of intersection of passion and opportunity.
I like that. The combination of passion and opportunity, but I would also throw in hard work, commitment, dedication, and the willingness to follow your dreams, even when maybe initially you don't reap some crazy results that put you on the map like Josh Pate is now. There's more with Josh. For instance, he owes me a free tank of gas. That explanation. We also talk about some of the bigger games over the weekend, though it was a preview that was done late last week, but part of our podcast, and I did share the link at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Glad to have you with us. Thanks so much for hanging out. Happy Labor Day to you. I was going to say, here's our latest sports update, but we're not there yet. So you're going to have to wait a few more minutes. Nope, that's it. Just zip it, Amy, on the Infinity Sports Network.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. Is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Well, that's jazzy. Final show with Ryan before producer Pete takes over. And let me tell you, he's thorough. I know, of course, his reputation precedes him. His reputation precedes him. It's Labor Day, you know, laboring on Labor Day. His reputation is well known. He is one of the original employees of the network, as am I, so there are not very many of us left. But we have been friends and allies now for a dozen years, but we have never had the chance to work together. We've always wanted to. We've talked about it. I'm not sure we ever really believed that it would actually happen. And so he said to me recently, it's surreal. It's pretty amazing to have the opportunity when we've talked about it for so long, and that's true. And now in my email box, I'm staring at a list of songs that he wants to use. I mean, it's long. as I say, he's very thorough. Would you like to hear a few of, we don't have to play them, but a few of the selections?
I will be judging, yes.
Well, he knows that I'm a Backstreet Boys fan. So Larger Than Life and Everybody are two of Boys fans. All right, let's say, I've never heard of this one. Where's My Thing from Rush?
He is a Rush guy.
I'm not cool, so I don't know a lot of Rush music. I would say I know a couple of songs, could recognize them and name that tune games, but I wouldn't necessarily
that's
know.
That's not a main hit for them.
I was going to say that I wouldn't know that they were Rush musical selections. Eddie Money, Two Tickets to Paradise. I like that one. He's going deep with the 80s and 90s music, which is fun. Let's see. Back to School from Jude Cole.
No idea.
I don't know what that is. Well, Raspberry Beret from Prince. That's a classic. I don't love Steve Winwood. I don't have the heart to tell him, but he's got a roll with it from Steve Winwood in here. Pitbull, Green Light.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's fun. Spice Girls, Wannabe. Spice Girls. Every show should have some Spice Girls sprinkled in. Let's see. Belinda Carlisle, Heaven is a Place on Earth. Oh, that's 80s, all right. Let's see. Billy Joel, You're Only Human. I don't know about that. He says Taylor Swift, especially during football season. Well, you know, we definitely need to be like every other radio show that's covering the NFL. Do love Laura Branigan. He's got self-control listed here. Let's see. Life is a Highway, both Tom Cochran and the new version. Which I think there are a couple of different versions.
That came out 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, there's a pop version, but there's also a couple of country covers of it as well. Let's see. Let's find one more. Van Halen, Humans Being.
He's pulling out deep cuts.
Yeah, I don't know that Van Halen song. James Brown, Living in America. That's pretty standard. Huey Lewis, Hip to Be Square.
Oh, that reminds me of American Psycho.
And then, let's see, there was another one that I thought was pretty interesting. Oh, Roxette, Joyride, She's Got the Look.
I imagine this is just Pete's playlist at home.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I can't wait to hear some of this stuff. Now, I generally tell the producers, I can't be in charge of the music. I have veto power if there's a song that I don't like or I don't think is appropriate, but I'm not going to tell you how to run the music on the show. Also, I'm not going to tell you how to drop in clips here and there. I'll let you have some creative freedom. Of course, there are times when I do have to rein in the producers, get a little bit eager. I think Pete and I will be figuring out our roles and our rhythm, and that takes time. But I, like I say, his reputation precedes him, and I know that he runs a very tight board. That's radio speak for he's technically sound and fairly brilliant when it comes to the technical side of things, which is good because then I don't have to worry about it. Let's talk to Harrison, who's in Iowa. Welcome to the show, Harrison.
Hi, Amy. It's a pleasure. I think the last time I talked to you, I did not congratulate you on your wedding.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
I'm really happy for you. I don't even remember how I, when I first started listening to you. I think it was around when Jim Rome got the CBS television gig. And then who was on after them? Tiki and whoever the other guy was.
Tiki and Tierney.
And I'd only been listening to you by then. And then one day you popped up on there for Maggie and Perloff. I was like, oh, okay, that's who she is. All right. So I had a face at least to go with your beautiful voice. I love how you span the globe of humanness with the dogs and the cooking and the grandmas and the weddings and, you know, family. Yes. I mean, you're an adorable girl. That's all I got to say. Caitlin Clark is should be MVP, period. Just for the simple fact of the, she's coming in like a supernova right now, and everybody else hates it because they're not her.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I don't think everybody else hates it. I think there are a few.
That was generalizing.
Yeah, that's not fair. There probably are players who are jealous, but come on, that happens in every sport. You've got quarterbacks who are buried on rosters and they're jealous of the guys who are getting all the attention. I mean, that's pretty standard human nature. So I do know there have been a lot of flagrant fouls against her. Interestingly enough, there have been more against her than there have against any other player in the league. So they've played her hard. Bird. They're welcoming her to the WNBA. I would say in some cases, yes, there is jealousy, but that's not so different than really any other sport in the country.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, even talking about sports entertainment, if you're a heel, you know, you have to have your babyface opponent. There always has to be, I mean, they've had it in comics. I mean, anything you can look at, there's got to be the good, the bad, according to whoever else is the consumer of it. And that's how this country works.
Good cop versus bad cop. Yeah. Well, I think she's terrific, and I do think she should be a candidate for MVP. However, there are some other really good players that are having career seasons, like Asia Wilson of the Aces, if you've heard of her.
I've heard of her, but I won't watch her unless she's playing in Indiana. Yeah. I mean, my mom's like your mom. She's telling me when the game comes on.
Oh,
like,
that's
what?
Sweet. Yeah, that's what my mom does, too.
You got eye on, don't you? Yeah, Mom, I got eye on.
That's okay, amazing. I love it. Yeah, my mom sends me text messages now about the Fever when
that's
they
what
win. Yeah, and what Caitlin does. And if I call her during the game or during when she's watching the broadcast played back, I have only half her attention. Yeah.
Oh, you're lucky to get that, right?
Hey, I'm happy for her.
Do me a favor. Really consider getting that second puppy, all right? Oh. I think that will do you guys some good. Love you, have a good night, you guys.
Thank you, Harrison. Good to talk to you in Iowa, which is, of course, Caitlin Clark country. I will admit, the Hubs and I have talked about when we might get a second dog. It will be hard, but you all will appreciate this. I made a concerted effort in the weeks after Penny died to give away her toys. Now, Daisy has commandeered her bed. One way that Penny has blessed the house is that Daisy loves her old bed. Daisy, meaning my husband's mini Aussie that we have now. She adores that bed, and so it went to good use. But between donations at a local animal shelter, between taking some of her meds to the vet so that people who needed them and couldn't afford them would be able to have them free, because when Penny first developed diabetes, they gave me a free vial of insulin. They said, someone donated it to us, we're going to give it to you. So I wanted to give back. So I took some of her meds and a bunch of her materials that I couldn't use back to the vet. I also gave away some of her toys and different things like that. But I was still looking for a way to share her food, because her food was in a big bin. It's sealed bin, but no longer in a bag. And so an animal shelter won't take an opened bag of dog food for obvious reasons. And so I wasn't really sure how I could share it, because it was all senior food. So it dawned on me at my church. I work with another woman who has 5 dogs. And I recently thought, I wonder if she has any seniors. So I asked her, as you can imagine, it's a lot to feed 5 dogs. And she said, absolutely, I have 2 senior dogs. So I was able to take 2 huge Ziploc bags full of food to her on Sunday. And I told her, if your dogs eat that, I'll give you the rest. So yeah, Penny is still blessing other dogs and blessing other people. She always was the sweetest dog. And so I've given away most of her stuff now. Bob did remind me over the weekend, well, maybe we should keep the container for the food, because, you know, we're going to get a new dog soon. So I'm thinking more about it. It still gives me pangs, and I still miss Penny so much. But I do know there are other dogs out there that need homes, rescue organizations, adoption shelters. I'm sure I can find another Aussie mix or something along those lines that desperately needs a home and would blend right in with our craziness. Got to be high energy. But I do miss Penny terribly, and I know you all miss the stories about her too, but she is still giving. She's still giving me joy, and she's still giving other people and other dogs joy too. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Again, the 3-2 from Kelly. Shohei swings. It's a high fly ball to center and deep. Going back, McCarthy. He's to the wall. It is gone. A home run. Shohei Ohtani. His 44th of the season on a 3-2 pitch to center field. Ohtani instant offense makes it 1-0.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Dodgers Radio Network, a couple reasons why we go back to that home run that started off the Dodgers and Diamondbacks. And this was taking place at Chase Field in the desert. In fact, it's a four-game series. They will wrap up with their fourth game on Monday afternoon. But the reason I go back to Saturday is because Ohtani blasts home run number 44 on the season. Even as Aaron Judge is still stuck, I'm using my air quotations, on 51. How long has it been, Ryan, since he's had a home run? I think it was early last week, right?
Four games?
It might be more than that. You and I were working together, weren't we? And we were joking about the fact that the media was pointing out it had been five whole games. I think it might have been a week since he hit a home run. And the Yankees have scuffled a bit because they need every bit of what he provides. We can go back and check. But he's stuck, quote unquote, on 51. Meanwhile, Ohtani is now up to 44. And right after he hit 44, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman homered in their at-bats. And so it's the first time in the Dodgers history that spans more than 140 years that they've led off the game with three consecutive solo home runs. And they needed all of that because Corbin Carroll, he had an inside the park home run for Arizona, and the Diamondbacks were game. In fact, they demolished the Dodgers on Sunday, and so if they win on Monday, Labor Day, they'll be right back where they started this series in the standings. Right now, the Dodgers lead by five games, but the Diamondbacks still have an opportunity. So, yes. Busy weekend for Ohtani. The reason that you care is because he is closing in on a 50-50 season. No one, as in no one, has ever had 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in the same year. But that's where he is right now. He's, I think, 44 and 43, if I remember correctly. He's got 44 dingers and 43 stolen bases. He's hitting just under 300. He's tied for third in the National League in RBI at 98. Let me see. I'm going to go check the overall stats. I know that it may seem off the beaten path, or maybe even to some, especially in the National League, it may seem outright wrong and sacrilegious to have a designated hitter be an MVP. Now, you've seen that in the past with the American League, and you've seen these kind of monster numbers that can power a team. But how is it that Shohei Ohtani, who's not pitching this year, at least not in any games, that he could be, I mean, I think right now the runaway MVP for the National League, though I suppose that could change. There's still time to go before we get to the end of the regular season. All right, so let's see. In the MLB races, and this is both leagues, he is tied for third in RBI. So he's tied with Marcell Ozuna and Josh Naylor of the Braves and the Guardians. So yes, this is not just tied. It's tied for third. He's second in the National League. He's tied for third in all of Major League Baseball. Judge right now, oh my gosh, 123 RBI. 123 RBI.
And six games without a homer.
Six games without a home run. So he's sitting on 51. Ohtani is now in second place with 44. Anthony Santander of the Orioles is still on 39. Marcell Ozuna and Juan Soto are at 37 each. And Soto, of course, this is already his career high. But yeah, the offense has significantly cooled off in the last week or so. And right now, Judge is still second when it comes to batting average to Bobby Witt of the Royals. Royals potentially part of the playoffs as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So don't have to worry about standings yet, though. We're into September, and technically that means stretch run. But the Dodgers are still trying to keep their pitching staff healthy. Clayton Kershaw is back on the DL. Not the DL, sorry, the IL. He's back on the IL, so that matters. And they're just hoping that they can get through the rest of this regular season, maintain that lead in the National League West, capture another division title. But I like the fact that they are being pushed. I like the fact that they're not out by 20 games in the West or have a double-figure lead in the standings, which means the games in September are essentially who cares types of games. No, this is happening for the Dodgers. They're feeling the heat from the Padres and the Diamondbacks behind them, which I think puts them in better position to succeed come the playoffs, come the wild card. We'll see who ends up with best record. That's actually going to be a race as well. And that's one that I think is really intriguing to watch, because in the National League, the Phillies are sitting on 81 wins. The Brewers are at 80 wins. The Dodgers at 82. That's a pretty tight race. Doing the quick math, 137 games so far for the Phillies. Same thing for the Dodgers, 137 games for the Dodgers. Are you impressed with my math? Ryan, yes. This is in my head, mind you. Now, there have been times in the course of my radio career where I've attempted to do simple division or simple multiplication while I'm talking. It doesn't always go well. Sometimes it comes out horribly wrong. But in this case, it's just simple addition, so we're good. 137 games, which means we've got 25 to go. Oh, boom, baby. 25. How about that? That's a nice round number. I like it. 25 games to go for each of the leaders in the National League. So the race is going to get hot and heavy. But that should be exciting as well. And yeah, lots of great wild card races in addition to the division races. Yankees lead the Orioles by just a half game now in the American League East. Even the Central has become a tight race, too, for the Guardians. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.